okay, as an artificer, you could say, like, it's a ring that just sucks up the magic of the universe just daily. It's just storing it in there. And, you know, like,
no, it's got a tiny compartment. You open it up, the spell's in there. You hold the spell.
It's a piece of paper you have to eat.
It's a little motivational cat poster. You can do it. It's like, oh, I can cast Fireball one more time.
Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odie.
I'm Jared Bornigal.
And I'm Will Meldon.
And we'll be hanging out with you for a while to talk about anything and everything D&D related. On this episode, we're taking a look at all the artificer changes in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. And then later on, looking at the new character options introduced at the beginning also of Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. So pull up a chair and stick around for a while.
Hello, everyone. I still don't know how to start videos. This is, like, totally different, yeah. So... you know, whatever.
Yeah, you don't need to recreate everybody. That's what we do at first.
Exactly. So it just feels weird. So coming at you with action shots and artificer. So with this being a newer class, I didn't anticipate too many changes to be made. It's not like the ranger that people have been asking for all of these balance changes. I know I personally have gripes with the alchemist subclass, but for them to go and do a total rework of the class just because we are whiny, probably a little too soon. Sure, they'll give it some time. But I was surprised to see that there were at least some changes made to the artificer. So we're not going to see any optional class features. These all actually came out as errata a couple days or so before Tasha's was released. So you might already know about these, you might not, whatever. The little tweaks were that you can now use thieves' tools for your magical tinkering. Super important.
Game breaking. Yeah. I mean, this is now the S tier meta class. I'm allowed to say S tier. You can't.
Artificer now playable. So I think before you could only use your tinkerer's tools or other artisan tools. Now it is just thieves' tools or other artisan tools. And I believe tinkerer's tools fall under that category of artisan tools. Great. I mean, it was in the class feature where you got proficiency in thieves tools, so why not? Again, just makes it a little bit simpler. The next thing was they changed the level requirement for the homunculus infusion from level 6 to, well, I guess no level requirement, which means you can get it at level 2. They also did a change to the stat block of the homunculus, just putting it more in line with the other new summon creatures, as well as the Beastmaster, basically uses your proficiency bonus for a couple of things. Don't think we need to go over all of the minutia, because we've done it like 6 times already. But the point is, it just scales on your proficiency bonus, and it's a lot nicer throughout the life of it. And I think the homunculus really needed that. This is the only thing I'd consider a real balance change.
Right, yeah, and making it available at level 2, because that's picking this infusion and having a homunculus kind of really changes your whole playstyle. And to have that come online at 6, like one of your possibly core features of your character concept, is a little late, so getting it early on.
Yeah, and even from a flavor perspective, I think that a homunculus is very much a flavor choice, and I wouldn't want to wait until level 6 for that.
Right. It's a long time to play a character. It's like, oh, just you wait. I've been on all my downtime. I'm tinkering on this thing. And just you wait till I get it fixed. It'll be really cool. And I have to drag that out for 6 levels. Dragging it out for your first level, cool. 6 levels. You're just going to forget about it. Then all of a sudden, it's there.
Right. Though that's basically like the entire wizard class. Like, oh, I'm working on some spells. I promise. Right. They're going to be awesome, guys.
Right.
They're right. It will be awesome. This is going to take a while.
Right.
I guess my question is, does this almost make it a hard to pass up thing as a beginning level artificer? Because it's not insane. It hasn't changed fundamentally, but second level, it's hard to kind of resist the urge to get that bonus action punching homunculus.
Yeah, I would argue that it's a little better. I think that before at level 6, it was just as strong as it is now at level 2. And then at level 6, it's more strong because, again, goes off your proficiency bonus for a couple of instances here. So by 6th level, you've got your +3 to your proficiency bonus, getting a couple more boosts to your stats and such. It is better. I don't know if it's a can't pass up. I just think that now if you do want to have that play style of the homunculus, it feels like you can actually do it. Before, it felt like a flavor pick that wasn't going to be very strong. Now I think it will work pretty well with what you want to do. But I don't think everybody needs to take it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it very much flavor. It's in the sense kind of like fine familiar with the wizard. Most wizards do end up taking it, I think. But you don't have to. You don't have to have it. But it is always nice to have.
Yeah. So, Will, do you consider fine familiar a must pick?
No, but it also lacks a little bit of the combat utility.
Right. That's true. That
you kind of get here. The Warlock's Pact of the Chain actually does have the combat utility, but it's so bad and risky, it doesn't actually ever come into play.
Yeah.
Whereas the Homunculus, less so.
Yeah, it always seems so crazy to me, the fact that it's written into the Warlock that your familiar can fight. It's like, I would never do that. I'm not going to do that. It does like 2 damage.
Yeah, I mean, when you compare it to a regular familiar that does no damage ever, it's infinitely better, but it's just not good.
With like a +2 to hit. I think we talked about this before, where the only one that might actually be worthwhile is that Fey Pseudo-Dragon? Maybe it's the Pseudo-Dragon. Because that can make like a con save that's super low, and if they fail, they like lose like a turn.
10.
Yeah. So, yeah, Homunculus, think it's a good change here. The last change, I guess important change, there might be one other infusion that they got rid of a level requirement on, but they changed the wording of the infuse items infusion, where before it said that you could replicate any common items in Xanathar's Guide to Everything. They scrapped that, and they just say you can replicate common items in whatever book. So that is just a quality of life change. Maybe somebody on D&D Next is going to find a extremely broken thing in one of the campaign books where they add random magic items, and with this you can now just ruin everything. But I think overall,
common magic item that it happens to be the MacGuffin.
Right.
It's in the book, DM.
But I think overall it's a simple quality of life change that I'm not going to have any arguments with. All right, so, again, all the simple changes. I think what we're really here to talk about, though, as Kevin said in the intro, is this new armorer subclass. So, Kevin, since you are so very excited, I know we haven't really been doing first thoughts on these, but just flavor-wise, mechanic-wise, just how do you feel about this, Kevin, in your heart of hearts?
I'm actually kind of lukewarm on it.
Oh.
I was just playing up some hype because, like, I mean, you read it and it's like, oh, you can be Iron Man. All right, this might be narrow-minded, but, like, I feel like that doesn't fit well in D&D. It's kind of this odd in-between between sci-fi and, like, classic medieval fantasy. And so, of course, there will be tables it works at and worlds it works at. And especially, I guess, Eberron, it would probably work really well, which is where the artificers are from. But I get the impression a lot of people don't play in Eberron. I get the impression a lot of people play in classic medieval fantasy worlds. And having this like Iron Man suit, but it's just powered by magic instead of technology. I don't know. It just... That's just personal opinion, though. I mean,
no, I think really that makes sense.
Bring it in.
What I will say is that with the Rune Knight, that gets me thinking on how the Artificer could be played out, where they are specifically inscribing on the armor, and like that's how the magic is pulled out from it. And I like that idea rather than it, and that's really how it's stated, is there is runes on there and arcane sigils and whatever else to make the armor do the things. But it does feel a little bit sci-fi-ish.
Right.
More so than even the Battlesmith, which has a walking tank next to you.
Right. Robot dog.
Robot dog with Battlesmith. Is that what I said in the first place? Yeah. I meant the Artillerist. The Artillerist has a tank next to you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, all of these are stretching the bounds of scientific magical limits. I don't know. But this one, I do get, like, you want to say, oh, it's like fantasy themed, but it really does just reek of big science armor.
Which still, I think, is cool. So
yeah, it's cool.
It's at least got that.
Yeah.
So let's get into the actual class features. Unless, Will, did you have any first thoughts? I usually just say something dumb, so I was just going to move on.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid and Kevin's wrong. All right, let's get into it.
All right, starting off here at level 3, you get Tools of the Trade, something that all artificers seem to get. This one specifically, you get proficiency in Smith's Tools if you don't already have it, and if you do, you choose something else and move on to the more interesting features.
But you missed the main thing of this.
What is it?
Proficiency with heavy armor.
Oh, you also get, that's, I thought the next thing.
Nope, Tools of Trade, you gain proficiency with heavy armor.
Oh, that's what I get for not having it up in front of me. Like, you could have it up in front of you if you were watching the video, as Kevin puts a nice little graphic of Tools of the Trade there. See what I did there, Kevin? I'm pushing the videos.
Yeah.
So I think this is probably a big reason of the heavy armor proficiency is a really strong thing for third level. Do any of the other artificers get heavy armor? I forget if Battlesmith does.
Battlesmith does, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I think. I might be lying now.
All artificers get light and medium armor. So
yeah,
there's at least that. But I believe that Battlesmiths just get the martial weapon proficiency. I don't think they get heavy armor, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Okay. So if you want heavy armor as an artificer, it's the only way you're going to get it. And heavy armor for a half caster, like a real half caster, not like the paladins where all of their spells are going to smites, that's pretty great just right out the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Could see a lot of people chasing this.
Cannot complain of heavy armor. I mean, overall, this is a very, very strong three-level dip, which we'll get to. But like the first like five abilities, you get all at third level.
Yeah, which is pretty crazy, but yeah. All right, so next is the spells. So they do get some specific spells for this this subclass that they always have prepared. And I think they're all actually really great. Starting off at third level, they get Magic Missile and Thunder Wave. Magic Missile is always a fantastic spell to have in the first place. Mm-hmm. Artificers normally do not get Magic Missile. And not having to prepare this is, again, just icing on the cake.
Yeah. Yeah, Magic Missile is that perfect spell for not needing to prepare. Just always having it.
Yep.
When you like, you just really need that guaranteed damage or something's right up in your face and you don't want to get disadvantage on the attack.
Right. Or it has resistances and you don't know what to and you don't want to mess around trying to find it. Then Thunder Wave, pretty good. I don't know. Like the spell. I don't have an issue with it. At fifth level, they get Mirror Image and Shatter.
And I love Mirror Image. That's one of my favorite.
Non-concentration spell.
Yeah.
It is,
and for someone who might be on the front line, just A+.
Yes. Yeah, I think this is going to mesh. That's not a word. It's going to mesh. Thank you. It's going to mesh extremely well with the Guardian armor, where you're
for sure
imposing disadvantage on all attacks that aren't against you. And then even if they are against you, I got my mirror image up, so it's going to be hard to hit me.
Right. Yeah. Mirror image is a second level spell. Lasts for a minute. It's not concentration, which is just what makes it. You make duplicates of yourself, and if somebody goes to hit you, they have to roll a dice, and if they're above or below a certain number, they hit one of your duplicates, and then if they hit that, it disappears. And then the number they have to roll to hit you starts going down as you lose your duplicates, but it's still just an amazing defensive spell. And artificers normally don't get it.
Right.
So
yeah, definitely a good way to start off combat, as it is a full action to cast. Next up at ninth level, they get Hypnotic Pattern and Lightning Bolt.
Both. Hypnotic Pattern is another one of my favorite. I feel like they found my secret diary of Kevin's favorite spells and just picked the best of it. I use Hypnotic Pattern all the time.
I really do think that
I'd
like to imagine you have that diary. That's just like a little thing that you just keep by your bedside.
Mm-hmm. Updated sometimes. Put little hearts next to the real favorites.
Yeah. After like a bad session with casting a hold person, you just open up your diary, start scratching it out.
I'm never going with something that isn't Hypnotic Pattern ever again.
Yeah, Hypnotic Pattern being the spell where it's a minute. This one is concentration. It's third level, so higher cost. If you make a 30-foot cube, anything in it needs to make a... What is it? Wisdom save. Or they're incapacitated. Yeah. Incapacitated for the duration. Speed of zero, all that. They don't get to repeat the save to wake up. It's just if they take damage or somebody uses their action to wake them up. So it's great. You can almost always guarantee knocking somebody out of the fight and at the very least wasting someone's action to wake them up.
Right.
Because it's usually easy enough to just avoid damaging someone who's been hit by this. It's really great battlefield control.
And just a reminder to everybody, because I always forget what incapacitated does specifically. That's the one where they can't take actions or reactions and it makes them lose concentration. If you become incapacitated, you can't hold concentration. So Hypnotic Pattern is absurdly great for dealing with, well, everything. Like any situation you have, Hypnotic Pattern is good. Unless they can't be charmed.
Yeah, and then also now they get Lightning Bolt, which is just a great AoE sort of spell. It's a line spell, but right. When you line it up, it's a lot of damage.
It does affect an area. It is an area of effect. Yeah, it's just not That's a circle. Yeah. So yeah, great. And
also
great damage,
fitting though, for the armorer, because you can just see like they're shooting the lightning bolt out of their magic armor fist or whatever.
Specifically, the infiltrator
out of their chest,
yeah, as they're already shooting lightning out of their hands.
Yeah,
it's just shooting more lightning.
Right.
Like putting their hands together for a Kamehameha.
Or again, Iron Man, the chest beam.
I got to be honest.
lean right into the sci-fi.
I watched like the first Iron Man movie. That is my. The extent of my knowledge of Iron Man.
That is all there is to know about the guy.
I think he's made of metal or something.
That's in the name.
He's like a cyborg.
I think, right. Yeah. All right.
People don't need to send in messages correcting us. We know that's not right.
Yes. At 13th level, they get even more great spells. They get Fire Shield, another non-concentration spell that is really great for the Guardian Armorer, as every time you get hit, you just reflect damage back, and you gain resistance to either cold or fire damage, and then you can deal either cold or fire damage. They reverse. I have to look that up every time, but I just used this spell in a little one-shot Kevin ran for us recently. And the entire time I was just like, this is great. This is the greatest spell I've ever used. So I love Fire Shield.
Yeah. 10 minutes, no concentration. Can't argue with that.
It's definitely going into my best spells diary.
Yes. just to note, Battlesmith also does get this though.
Oh, okay.
So just another way to get it as an armor, which is also another fitting subclass to have it.
Definitely. The next spell is Greater Invisibility.
Yeah, again, I mean, permanent invisibility for a minute, it's concentration, but you could attack with it, so you get advantage in all your attacks, things get disadvantage on you, you could hide with advantage, any spell that requires a target you could see, which is a surprising amount of them, just doesn't work on you. You just can't be targeted.
Yeah, I would be excited to see a high-level rogue infiltrator armorer multiclass. I think that would work out really well.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Because I believe all you need for the sneak attack is it just has to be a ranged attack, correct? And those lightning gauntlets count as a ranged attack.
Yeah, pretty sure. Yeah, if you're not doing melee, the whole finesse weapon thing I don't think comes up at all, as long as it's ranged.
Yeah, so this would be awesome. Yeah, we can double check that. If we're wrong, we're wrong, but I'm pretty sure that works with a sneak attack. Again, at high levels, so I'm just dreaming here, but use your greater invisibility, get your shots off at advantage, and get that sneak attack. Beautiful.
Yeah, and yeah, the attack must use a finesse or a ranged weapon. So
there you go.
Yep, if those counts as ranged, which they do, as long as you meet the other usual requirements.
Then last on the spell list, we get Pass Wall and Wall of Force. I don't even know what Pass Wall does.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm not familiar with that.
You pass through a wall.
A passage appears... I think that's quite literally at a point of your choice. You can see on a wooden, plaster, or stone surface, such as a wall, ceiling, or floor. You choose the opening's dimension. The passage creates known stability. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, okay. It just allows you to
So it seems like they went with this...
Fifth level spell, less for an hour, no concentration.
They went with this flavor of every single level. It seems like one of these fits the infiltrator, the other fits the guardian. So you're getting two great spells, but I don't know if pass wall I'd consider to be amazing, but it definitely fits the infiltrator theme.
For sure, yeah. Now, how would you flavor that to work with your Magic Iron Man stealth armor?
Your armor just deconstructs and warps into the wall and then makes a doorway. I have no idea.
Spreads it open. You walk through and then it slams back shut.
Or you just,
an hour later. Yeah.
You punch the wall and it just like starts to unfold almost. I have nothing for this.
Yeah. I mean, it also doesn't need to. You could just traditionally cast a spell and there you go.
Right. All I would honestly do is you just take your hand and like wave it in the shape of the door and boom, pass wall appears. But no, yeah. I don't think your armor's doing this specifically. Unless you had, again, a tiny little... Because the artificer's whole thing is flavor your spells in order to make them feel like an artificer spell. The only thing I can think of is your gauntlet turning into like a shovel and just going right through the door as if it was butter.
Maybe some like you produce like little nanobots that go on the wall and they kind of dissolve it down, and
you know,
after an hour amount of time they reverse their work.
They're not nanobots if it's magic, Kevin.
Right.
They're wisps.
Magic nano wisp bots. Whatever, man.
Yeah, I guess it's the fact that it disappears after makes it really hard.
Yeah, it's not, you're not just punching a hole in a wall.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah. Anyways, and then their last one, Wall of Force, another fantastic spell. Fifth level spell. This is concentration for a minute. There's a whole bunch of wall spells out there. This is the one where it's basically impenetrable. You can make it in a dome. You can trap people inside of it. There is a lot of shenanigans to be pulled with Wall of Force because there's only a few things that could bypass it. So this is the type of thing where it's like somebody casts a wall of fire as a circle and then traps the enemy inside. And then you cast a wall of force around the wall of fire, trap them in there, just cooking them alive and remove somebody from a fight, things like that. I don't think you could even cast magic through it, can you?
No.
No. Just disintegrate, which just burns the disintegrate, which is kind of a big deal.
Right.
Right.
Fifth level spell canceling out a sixth level one that... they would need to have in the first place, which is pretty specific.
Actually, you might be able to pass through it. It says nothing could physically pass through the wall. And it's immune to all damage. It can't be dispelled by dispel magic. A disintegrate spell. But that doesn't mean you can't, like, cast a spell that requires, like, somebody you could see on the outside of it. You might be able to still cast.
It's not opaque. It doesn't block vision.
An invisible
is what
wall.
I'm saying. Yeah.
No, yeah, yeah, it's an invisible wall.
Yeah. So, okay. I guess you could... do like a hold person from the other side of it.
Yeah.
But a martial character, this locks them down.
Oh yeah. So yeah, great spell list. I
not a dud on there. Besides maybe pass wall. But it's again flavorful. I just don't know how great that is.
Yeah. And Shatter's okay. You know, quickly gets outclassed by like Fireball, but you get this at second level.
And it also has the secret, sneaky blow-up constructs thing.
Right, yeah.
If they're made out of stuff.
For when that comes up.
And it will sometimes come up, and then the DM's like, wow, you just blew up my guys.
Right.
Wow, I had no idea you had Shatter. I totally didn't plan this encounter to have you feel cool for having Shatter. The secret behind every DM. There's no balance. It doesn't matter. Right. All right, then go ahead.
Go on.
Take it away. I already took spells.
All right. Then also at third level, they get arcane armor. Your metallurgic pursuits have led you making an armor a conduit for your magic. This is where you get your special Magic Iron Man armor. As an action, you can turn a suit of armor you are wearing into this arcane armor, provided you have smith's tools. While you are wearing this armor, you have the following benefits. If the armor normally has a strength requirement, it lacks that. You can use this arcane armor as a spell, casting focus for your artificer spells, and it attaches to you and can't be removed against your will. It also expands to cover your entire body, and you can deploy or retract your helmet as a bonus action, which is just more Iron Man bullshit, which it's kind of cool. I'm right with
helmets
it.
Don't even do anything.
right?
Literally.
It's 100% flavor, but yeah. It's great. I'm fine with it. And it's also armor replaces any missing limbs, functioning identical to the limb it replaces, and you could doff or don the armor as an action. It continues to be your arcane armor until you don another suit of armor or you die. And then this armor, it does end up doing more also at third level where you pick an armor model, but we'll get to that in a minute. Even just as is, just like a spellcaster getting this armor they're proficient in where they don't have to worry about strength and all that is pretty cool.
Yes. As I'm saying, I see this being chased as a 3-level dip by a lot of spellcasters, especially a wizard. Mm-hmm. I know that the last couple levels of wizard take you from your pretty good to absolute god mode because you're casting like second level spells as if they were cantrips, but this is still so great that it's going to keep you alive to see that day.
Right.
And the stat increases you get from not having to chase down strength to wear heavy armor efficiently, it's kind of a big deal.
Right.
Right. And then permanently having your spellcasting focus on you, basically.
Yeah, your hands are free all the time.
Yeah.
You don't need to pull anything out. You can easily use a two-handed weapon and don't have to have any weirdness, which I think is mostly ignored when it comes to people just at a table talking about, oh, well, I have to pull out my arcane focus and I can't do that because this turn I used a longbow. Usually it's just a matter of, yes, you hold the longbow with one hand, whatever, it doesn't matter. But this just gets rid of any and all weirdness, so I love that.
Right. And then at our table, we're not really big sticklers about, did you sleep in your armor? Did you take it off when it was not appropriate to have it on? Things like that. And just kind of assume we're just generally in our armor. But I do know there are tables that are more strict on that for the more realistic approach. And then that like 10 minutes to don heavy armor is a penalty, it is a problem, and just making it an action is nice. I'm sure at certain tables that will come up a lot and be a really good benefit to chase down.
Right, and even ones where it's not used for the sleeping aspect, you can still set up a ton of scenarios where it doesn't make sense for the party to have their armor, and
right.
The only thing that I was thinking is, it doesn't say that the armor itself shrinks. So you might just be walking around with a full suit of armor just underneath your arms. And then
right.
When you need to, you just snap your fingers.
Yeah, it doesn't really explain how that works, but
we just picture Iron Man.
Yep.
Snapping his fingers just, and all the pieces fly out of the sky.
Yep.
Not like a backpack that like shuffles out around you and covers you in metal.
I like that, though.
Yeah, it's much better. You have to carry this huge backpack.
Yeah.
Like one of those big military rucksacks always just back there, and it's just clanking and loud as hell at all times.
That's basically what every adventurer has anyways, though.
As I say, yeah, and it's just kind of ignored.
Yeah.
900 pounds of pots, pans, and treasure just everywhere we go.
You get one good cast iron, and you don't need any of that. Be so heavy. Probably a little too heavy.
The cast iron pot or pan.
Yeah.
That's what would be too heavy.
No, cast iron is carried by backpackers all around the world.
I don't know if that's true. I have no backpacking experience.
Leave the sleeping bag, bring the cast iron.
I believe it. I know Will is an expert and Kevin knows nothing about this. Did no research into it ever.
I've worn many backpacks.
He was actually called a backpack kid in high school, so I don't even know what that would be. It's just
a high school student.
Yeah, right? Don't you mostly wear backpacks?
Yeah, I say don't most students have backpacks.
It's the rolly backpacks that got me.
Hmm.
Not a fan.
I can't picture that at school. That might have caught on.
It must have, because it was horrible. Halls are already crowded and you just get the kid who's got a rolly backpack and it's like, come on, you've got like 3 books in there. You can carry it. It's fine.
I do know there was a point in time there was a big concern and kind of a fear around like damaging teenagers' backs because like the course loads, the textbooks they needed were just so heavy. So maybe it was a response to that. It's nothing I ever looked into.
We made that up to whine about stuff. I couldn't do my homework. These books weighed too much.
Sir, you have a suit of armor on your back. That's why I can't put the books on. No, see, that's light. I can just snap my fingers and it just surrounds me. All right. So,
anyways, yeah.
After you get these lovely restriction lifts, you also get to choose your armor model, either Molinar 6 or 51B. Sorry, that's the wrong
game. Recon, bro.
Yeah. Wrong game, sorry. but you do get the Guardian and the Infiltrator. And I really just wanted that that shitty joke, Kevin, so you can keep going on these.
Yeah. I say I don't even get it.
Mjolnir, that's the Halo armor, like the Spartan armor.
Oh,
51B, okay. That's the power armor in Fallout.
Got it. Yeah, okay.
Just more armor so, jokes. That's what I got. That's what I bring to the table. I don't know, Iron Man.
Yeah, so when you customize your arcane armor, you can change the armor's model whenever you finish a short or long rest. Being able to do it on a short rest, I think it's really cool.
Yeah, that's important.
Provided you have smith tools in hands, which I don't know why you wouldn't. There are two options, the Guardian and the Infiltrator. The Guardian is designed to be frontline in conflict and has the following features. So you get Thunder Gauntlets. Each gauntlet counts as a simple melee weapon when you aren't holding anything in it, and it deals 1d8 thunder damage on a hit. And a creature that's hit by this has disadvantage on attack rolls against targets other than you until the start of your next turn. As the armor, magically, there we go, emits a distracting pulse when the creature attacks someone else. There's a couple other features, but I mean, this is great. Just being able to count simple melee weapons means you actually can take advantage of the unarmed strikes. Dual wielding, bonus action, dual wield attack. And the fighter episode we talked about there where fists may not technically count as a weapon, which means you cannot make a bonus action attack with them or with the two-weapon fighting. This one you clearly can.
That's a good point.
You do get extra attack at fifth, so you can get up to three attacks with this thing, each one doing 1d8 thunder damage. And then there's the automatic. There's no save. There's no limit on how often you can do this. Just every time you hit a creature with this, they have disadvantage on attack rolls against other targets that aren't you.
Yeah, so you can do this against three separate targets.
Yeah, you could.
And just lock down the battlefield. Now, what I was wondering, is there any reason why you couldn't hold a normal weapon in one hand in case you didn't want to aggro everybody? I know that's mostly the Guardian's thing, but there may be some times where maybe you just don't want to get punched this round. So you just gauntlet one hand, short sword or long sword, I guess, whatever, right, in the other hand. The only downside is it wouldn't use your intelligence modifier. Because unlike the Battlesmith, this doesn't change how weapons work entirely. It's just your armor weapons that get the benefit of using your intelligence modifier.
Right. I skipped that in the explanation. Yes, there's when you attack with the... Each mod includes a special weapon. When you attack with that weapon, you can use your intelligence instead of strength or dex. It's a very important point that I skipped, so thank you.
No problem.
Yeah. Which also does make it another good contender for a 3-level dip for a wizard.
Yeah.
Not blade singing, because I know they cannot wear heavy armor.
Right. That's okay.
Yeah.
We don't need this with blade singing.
Right. Well, that's kind of the first one you go to if you think like a melee martial. Yeah. Wizard. But yeah, in terms of what you were saying, I don't see why you couldn't. Each of the armor's gauntlets counts as a simple melee while you aren't holding anything in it.
Right. That's what I figured.
Could forego one, I would think, yeah. And this is... For 5th edition, they've definitely done a lot more to add it. Early on, there was really no way to actually tank in the traditional RPG sense because you couldn't make anything actually attack you. They've added more of like the Ancestral Guardian and stuff, and now this Thunder Gauntlets and the Guardian Armor is another thing in that line, so that's nice.
Yeah, and I think mixing this with some of the armor infusions is where this is really going to start to shine, or just infusions in general, just right. being able to pull damage towards you. I mentioned earlier those spells, Fire Shield, Mirror Image, both of those mm-hmm. are going to mesh really well with this.
You can have both those up at the same time.
Yes, you can.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And still you can concentrate on another spell. It would take forever to set up, yeah. but like in the really big right. fights, you would just be, hold on, everybody. Got to get all my spells cast, then I can start attacking, I promise.
Right.
Take two levels into Fighter just for that action surge.
Right. All right, the Guardian also gets then a defensive field. This is a bonus action. You gain temporary hit points equal to your level in this class. Temp hit points always replace your current pool. They don't add to it. You lose these if you take off the armor. And you can use this bonus action number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain that on a long rest.
So this is a feature that actually is less powerful with multiclassing. Just in the sense that yes. all these elves are just like, oh, this is so good to just be able to justify a three-level dip. This one actually isn't that great, even with a three-level dip. If you take,
well, it just becomes heavy armor master, but it requires a bonus action.
Right.
And it's, you can only do it a few times a day.
Yeah, up to your proficiency bonus. So that does scale regardless of everything else. But if you take only three levels and you have that six proficiency bonus, you're getting 18 temp HP over the course of a long rest. Not that impressive at the higher levels.
Actually, I was going to say, when you put it like that, that's kind of nice.
It's free.
Just as a free thing. This is not compete. This took like spell slots or
right.
some other resource that competed. Just as a free thing. I don't know. It's
in comparison,
it's not amazing.
Though.
It's not something worth chasing down for a multiclass. But getting this in addition to all of the other benefits of this magical armor and the Thunder Gauntlets, I'm
yeah.
okay with it.
Yeah, it's just it's going to be unnoticed, basically. Not that it's bad, because it's not bad. It's just free health. Just 18 yeah. health over the course of six bonus actions.
Right. And how many, at what point do you get six level proficiency? For some reason, I was thinking at six level getting 18
no.
health. No, this is high.
Like,
this is like close to 20.
14th or 17th level? I think it's 14th.
And can you take that many high level hits?
Oh, no,
you
know,
shaving three off
17th.
Each time?
17th level.
Yeah.
This scales really, really well with the class as a monoclass, though.
Yes, extremely well. To the point that mm-hmm. at 20th level, you're getting 120 temp HP over the course of a long rest. That's another character.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, even at 7th level, you're looking at 21 temp HP a day. 3 proficiency plus 7, or I guess times 7, yeah. Works out pretty well. That's about
right,
almost about half your HP around that level. You usually got about like 50 or so.
Right.
I mean, look at it another way. It's kind of almost evening out. If you're playing a tank, you've got D8 hit dies. This oh. gets you a lot closer to, say, a barbarian.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that hasn't been mentioned. It's just one of the biggest, I won't say flaws, because I think this balances it out, but you are playing a tank with a D8 hit dice. It's not like the Ancestral Guardian, where you've got resistance to all damage and the highest hit die in the game. You're actually at one of the lowest.
Right. Yeah, so, as a monoclass, that's pretty great. That adds up a lot.
One thing that's kind of interesting about this feature is you don't lose the temp HP until you take off the armor. So in theory, you could actually use this before a short rest and then take a short rest to switch over to your infiltrator armor, because that does not require you taking it off, I believe, unless I'm wrong. So you could officially use this beforehand, switch to your infiltrator armor, and then carry that a little bit of temp HP. It's nothing crazy or broken.
Yeah, I mean, that's not broken, but just from a like realism standpoint, I would say you have to take it off. Like to change the style, you have to have smith's tools, which I think implies you're working on it, and I don't think
it implies like, but the actual mechanics is an action. I just pictured like bam and then it, whatever it is.
Well, to change the model, it's just whenever you finish a short or long rest, provided you have yeah. the smith's tools in hand. Actually, it doesn't say you have to do anything. You can just, as long as you just yeah. stand there with the smith's tools in your hand, just it changes.
It's not a hill I'm going to die on if someone feels really, really strongly that they should be able to keep their temp HP fine. But it feels kind of silly.
It does. No, I totally agree. But it is right. interesting to me that you can use up, because you can do this up to proficiency bonus, as has been said. You can use up that feature on the Guardian armor and then switch to Infiltrator and get everything that Infiltrator has. It's just a weird kind of play style. I don't know if even play style is the right way to put it. It's just like an optimization thing, kind of like using the second wind as a fighter before taking a short rest, stuff like that.
Yeah, but for this to happen, it needs to be, the temp HP is not such a big bonus that it's worth sacrificing literally anything else for it. So it needs to be a situation where you would have previously wanted your Guardian armor and you are taking a short rest and you know after the short rest I'm going to need my Infiltrator armor. Yeah. That's it.
And I think, I totally agree. It's not going to be used all the time. But that said, I feel like that's going to be the main way Infiltrator ends up getting used. But we'll probably get to that when we talk about Infiltrator more. I don't view it right. as powerful as the Guardian by a long shot.
Yeah, it's definitely not combat oriented.
Shocker. Being called Infiltrator.
Yeah. Though then again, it kind of is. I don't know.
Well, we can talk about it now. I don't have anything else on the defensive field.
Yeah, so the other model is the Infiltrator. You customize your armor for subtle undertakings. Your special weapon is a lightning launcher. It's a gem-like node that appears on your armored fist or chest. It counts as a simple ranged weapon with a normal range of 90 feet and disadvantage out to 300 feet, and it deals 1d6 lightning damage on a hit. Once on each of these turns, when you hit a creature, you can deal an additional 1d6 lightning damage. So it just gives you a d6 ranged attack. Nothing crazy there. It's sort of like a sneak attack light. By being able to add an extra D6, but you could just do that for free. You don't need to have things lined up.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice. That could stack with a rogue multi-class, though, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and the phrasing there, that you customize your armor for subtle undertakings, that phrasing made me think of you, Kevin, because every time we talk about the rogue sneak attack, you're like, no, the sneak attack isn't about being sneaky. It's about, you know, the subtle undertakings. You don't actually say that specifically, but that idea of like trying to find the weaknesses more than
an opportunist.
Yes, opportunist. Yeah. It's that said,
the subtle undertakings, blast lightning.
That's what I was laughing about. Yeah,
nothing more subtle than blasting people with lightning,
right?
Yeah, the lightning launcher itself isn't really that powerful, though. Once you get that extra attack, we're talking about 3d6 damage around, plus your intelligence modifier for two of them. It's pretty weak, and that's a hand crossbow.
Yeah, about 46. Yeah,
but compared to
you
can
add a free one. Like if you hit all attacks, you get three attacks.
Yeah,
because you can do the extra. Why? Or no, it's not two weapon fighting.
No.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, 3d6 compared to like the Thunder Gauntlets, where you can get your bonus to action attack, so you get 3d8.
But compared to ranged attacks that everybody else has available, it is hand crossbows, but that's hand crossbows are in line with most of the other stuff in the game. It's not a longbow, but it's almost a longbow.
Yeah. I think honestly what I would do with this though is, well, can they use bows at all? They can use crossbows and such, right?
They can use guns, bro.
They can use guns. Yeah, so I would probably, optimization standpoint of playing this, make the first attack using your fist, try and get that lightning to hit. If it hits, I would switch weapons to something that does more damage. It depends on how the intelligence modifier works out, because you'd have to use dex compared to intelligence. Right. But I think, just taking a guess here, I assume that dex would be your backup stat anyways. I guess I really don't know. What would be a secondary stat for this? It really only needs intelligence.
Yeah, and then you con and dex. You get benefits for that for every class, but this one especially, like Mirror Image, which uses your dex as an AC for your clones.
That would
stack pretty well.
Right.
Yeah, so I could definitely see trying to do that. You just make your first attack with your lightning. Second attack, you have your heavy crossbow that does a D10, and you're going to use that instead because it does more damage. Or your gun, your literal gun. Nothing says right. sneaky like pulling out a gun.
Right.
Yeah, the problem is the crossbows like break everybody's brain because you can only use them once a round unless you do what everybody does and cheat.
You mean take the crossbow expert feat?
I meant feat.
Oh.
Which are optional rules.
Ignore the loading property, yeah.
Or the infusion. They have the infusion that allows them to...
they can just cheat their way through that now, too. So that's right. a good point.
Right.
It's still not as good as a gun, so unless you use that. Always use the gun.
Yeah. One thing just to point out, they only get proficiency in simple weapons.
Okay.
So like heavy crossbows and stuff, but I think a hand crossbow is a simple weapon.
Which
simple ranged weapons, a light crossbow, a dart, a short bow, and a sling.
Light crossbow is 1d8.
Yes.
Okay. So that could be your optimal choice there.
Yeah.
But again, it depends on what your dex is. Because if your dex is +5, then you're not getting most of your damage from the roll anyways. You're getting it from the damage addition. You mean
intelligence?
Didn't I say intelligence?
I thought you said dex.
It doesn't matter what I said.
Yeah. intelligence, yeah.
It's not like people are listening to this for information. So,
their lightning launcher, a little weak. To be honest, I don't know if the other two abilities you get at third level really make up for it. So you get powered steps, your walking speed increases by 5 feet, and dampening field, you have an advantage on stealth checks.
Yeah.
Which means to point out, if you're doing this in heavy armor, all heavy armor, it gives you disadvantage, so it just cancels out. You just don't have disadvantage on stealth anymore.
That said, if you know that you're really needing to be sneaky, you can just use medium armor.
Right.
You can swap it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I say this stuff doesn't have to be on heavy armor.
You will lose that temp HP, though. You'll have to take it off. So, no, I'm with you, though. I don't think that they're really that great. I think this is something that, as I mentioned before, people will use when they know they need it. Otherwise, they're going to stick with that guardian.
Right.
Unless this really fits your playstyle. If you're doing the rogue, maybe you would want to keep that on all the time.
Right, yeah. At ninth level, when you get to add a modification to these, the infiltrator modification is pretty nice. Or no, I'm sorry, that's 15th level perfect armor. That's really high.
Yes. Okay. But
we'll get to that in a bit.
Next is the extra attack, which already kind of mentioned. You get an extra attack.
It's just like every other thing that gets it, which is nice. I mean, it's not a guarantee for the artificer. The battlesmith gets it, but like the artillerist or alchemist does not, so.
Yeah. I think the only thing I will comment about this extra attack is I think I would have rathered them do something more specific to the guardian or infiltrator, where maybe the guardian gets the extra attack, because that's fitting. They're supposed to be punching stuff and locking stuff down more. And maybe just keeping the infiltrator at that single attack and giving them more to the sneak attack, light. I think that would have been a little more fitting, is increase the lightning damage or something along those lines, or do something more with it. Then just giving them both extra attack felt lazy.
Yeah. Actually, I like that idea. That would have been interesting. Split the fifth level into two things, and it just didn't need a change to the Guardian Infiltrator armor. And then it gives you kind of more options about as you switch between.
Right. Rather than it just being, the extra attack is like, here you go. This is what everything gets at fifth level. What else should we do?
Right. Yeah, I wonder if it was more for ease, because if it's... modifies the armor, that's just more additional things you need to keep track of.
They're fine with doing it at 15th. They're fine with doing it at 3rd.
Right. Yeah.
What's one more?
It's one more thing to keep track of.
Oh, right. Right.
Almost precisely one more thing to keep track of.
Thank you, Will.
All right. Then at 9th, they get armor modifications. You learn how to use your artificer infusions to specifically modify your arcane armor. The armor now counts as separate items for the purpose of your infusions. So you have the chest piece, the boots, the helmet, and the armor special weapon. So it sounds like even if you have two, like with the fist, it still just counts as one, which is Fine, so that's four additional links to infuse. Each of those items can bear one of your infusions, and the infusions transfer over if you change your armor's model with the armor model feature. In addition, the maximum number of items you can infuse at once increases by two, but those must be part of your arcane armor.
Which isn't too hard of a sell.
No. Yeah, that's...
So that puts you up at ninth level to five infused items, and at max level, or I guess max infusions, up to eight. That's a lot.
Right.
Six already that feels like a lot, but this is crazy.
Really just completely decking yourself out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's some really good infusions, and especially they've added new infusions, some specific for... Clearly, like, it doesn't have to be for the armor, but it's clearly intended for them. And just some really, really solid options, and we will cover those now or at the end? We didn't talk about
at the end. We'll cover them at the end.
At the end? Okay.
The only question that I had around this is if you can modify your gauntlets, does that count as modifying a weapon? Because they are simple weapons, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So you could do, like, the plus one to your gauntlets then. Yep. Or the radiant weapon and all of those awesome abilities.
Yep, that's my understanding.
Okay. Good. That makes them really good.
Yeah, like the lightning launcher counts as a simple ranged weapon, so... Same with... I guess they don't really... Off the top of my head, the only infusion that impacts us is like repeating shot, which doesn't impact it.
So no, I think not, you can make it a plus one and a plus... It would be a plus two, I think, at level nine.
Right.
Or maybe that's 15. It doesn't matter. Either way, you make it a plus weapon. That's good. And another reason not to use a hand crossbow, because you'd rather just put all your infusions in one than spread it out.
Right. Also, I back on lightning launcher, since it does lightning damage, in a sense, it kind of acts as magical. Like, I mean, it's technically not magical, like, piercing damage, but for... The type of stuff where it's, you know, resistance or immunities to slashing, piercing, and bludgeoning by non-magical attacks, which gets common at higher levels, just does that.
Yeah, that's definitely
then
good.
Again, the artificer is the one who has the ability to just infuse their light crossbow, and there you go. But
same with the gauntlets. That makes it magical. But this works for low levels. I guess really up to level 9, you can easily get around... resistances, or I guess magical resistances. It'll come up, right. I think.
Yeah. But so if we're reading this right, before level 9, you can only put one infusion on your armor and it counts as armor, correct?
Yeah. And
you can't do a weapon infusion on this armor or anything.
I would assume it's either or, right?
Yeah, that's what I would think too. You can either infuse your gauntlets, which are part of the armor, as a weapon. Or you can infuse your armor. I think it has a duality.
I'm not so sure, because before this, it's clearly just, it is a piece of armor. You take a piece of armor, be it plate mail or leather or whatever, and you add these benefits to it. You say, this is guardian armor now, and I get the special thunder attack, and I can do a defensive field, and it doesn't require my strength and stuff like that. But it's still, at the end of the day, it's armor with... features tacked onto it, which makes me think you can't add weapon infusions to it.
I could entertain that idea, because they do call it out.
Yeah, that's
which is okay. I mean, before you still get some really cool infusions that could go on armor.
Yeah,
so that's fine, but
it would lend more credit to what you were mentioning about being able to overcome magical resistances with your gauntlets before a certain point,
right?
So otherwise you're waiting until level 9, and at that point it's definitely going to have come up once or twice. And if your thunder gauntlet or your guardian gauntlets, we'll just
thunder
say that.
Gauntlets.
Is thunder okay? Yeah, if your thunder gauntlets can't overcome that, then you're going to feel a little lacking compared to taking the lightning ones.
Right. Well, except for thunder gauntlets do thunder damage, so it's...
What? Do those get over it too?
Yeah.
Well, this doesn't matter then.
None of this matters.
I mean, it matters in the sense that, yes, the Guardian armor, or just the armors in general, get around the resistance to non-magical bludgeoning, piercing, slashing damage. So that's good. Right. But it doesn't matter which armor type you choose.
Right.
Oh, man. It'd be so fun to fight an Earth Elemental, just dealing thunder damage to him.
Oh, yeah.
Shattering them apart.
Just massive chunks of it blowing off on every punch. All right. And then finally, at 15th level, you get perfected armor. Each model gains the appropriate benefit for Guardian. When a huge or smaller creature you can see ends its turn within 30 feet, you can use your reaction to force the creature to make a strength save against your spell save DC, pulling the creature up to 30 feet towards you to an unoccupied space. You know what's kind of funny? It doesn't specifically say if it fails. I know that's what's probably intended, but usually it always says, on a fail, this happens. It just says...
So that's something I've actually noticed with the wording. If nothing happens, if they... Oh, you're saying... Wait a second. You're saying that it doesn't say if they fail, it pulls them. It just says you force them to make the strength save, and it pulls them. Yeah, okay, that is poor phrasing. Usually it does say if they fail.
Right.
It just happens.
It's not important.
Because, they make it, and it just happens.
We know what the intent is, but yeah. If you pull the target to space within 5 feet of you, you can make a melee weapon attack against it as part of the reaction. You could use this a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you get them all back on a long rest.
So this is okay, but being tied to proficiency bonus, I don't think it's amazing by any means. Just because it's
90% sure this is a move from Marvel versus Capcom. You, as Iron Man, you like your suit opens up and the magnet energy sucks the opposing fighter and then you punch him in the face.
Somebody literally just played Marvel vs. Capcom and made a D&D character around it.
Yeah, it's starting to bug me.
But yeah, I mean, you get a couple extra punches per long rest and a bit of battlefield control. It's okay. I think that this was rounding out the curb as we get to the infiltrator.
That's what I was going to say, where it's this needed to be weaker because it's the Guardian armor before this is stronger. But it goes unbalanced between level 3 to 15.
Pretty big.
It just kind of seems like not the greatest.
Pretty big gap there.
Design there, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like with this again being free. It's not competing with any other resource using spell slots or anything like that. You'll use it. You'll find uses for it. It's definitely not going to be game breaking. It's not going to be playstyle changing. But I guess it's kind of nice.
Quite the opposite. I think it is going to be solidifying your playstyle even more.
Right.
Yeah. My only issue is that it just feels a little bit lacking for a 15th level ability, the capstone of this subclass. Right. But you know, I'm not going to be upset over it.
Right. All right. And then the infiltrator. So then any creature that takes lightning damage from your lightning launcher, glimmers with magical light until the start of your next turn. This creature sheds dim light in 5-foot radius and has disadvantage on attack rolls against you as the light jolts if it tries to attack you. In addition, the next attack roll against that creature has advantage. And if the attack hits, it takes an additional 1d6 lightning damage.
That's really great. And there's no proficiency bonus tied to that. That is everything you attack. You can attack two different creatures, right? There's no once per turn. Yeah, so you attack two different creatures. You make them both glimmer. Then somebody comes in and gets advantage on their next attack and an extra d6 if it hits.
Right.
Great.
Yep, and it also then makes it harder to hit you, which again, if you do kind of that infiltrator.
The flavor of these things always really gets under my skin. Like, oh, I've created this magical armor and I can make it so that the next time something tries to hit me, it'll just flare up. Why don't you do that so that if it tries to hit anybody, why is it just you? Why are you just protecting yourself? Protect everybody. If you can make it have disadvantage, however you want to say that from a flavor perspective, but if you can impose disadvantage on yourself, why would you not want to impose disadvantage on all of your allies?
Right. It's like the opposite of the Cavaliers thing, where after you hit them, you can like mark them and then make them have disadvantage if they attack anybody but you, I think.
Right. It's like, just give them disadvantage. And I know, I understand that the intent behind it is purely game-based. And that's fine. I think for that purpose, it's awesome.
I can see an argument for the kind of the mind games of it. It's like, so the infiltrator in this case, very clearly, they're trying to make it so they are not attacked. To go attack the big barbarian or the other artificer in the guardian armor and stuff like that. And if it was just like
artificer party,
right? Yep. That could be a fun party.
It would.
They're varied enough in their subclasses. Anyways. And if it was set up in a way where then they just have disadvantage on every attack, it's not going to sway who they attack. They're just going to keep going after who they were going to go after. Or actually probably maybe even specifically still you, because you're going to be the easiest to hit. This makes them less likely to attack you. Same with then, like the opposite with the Cavalier, where it's like, all right, you just have disadvantage on everybody. It's like, okay, great. I'm going to go still try and beat up on the wizard because it makes no difference. Where it's like, no, you're going to have disadvantage on the wizard, but not on me.
Right.
So you should come and hit
me. It's incentivizing who they attack or who they don't attack.
But yeah, that's the armor.
I would say the Guardian also gets it. It's not just Cavalier, because Guardians is basically the exact same thing.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Where they just punch in. So I do like, you, again, the opposing play styles of them.
Right.
It does suck that the Infiltrators doesn't really come out until 15th level.
Right, yeah. The Infiltrator just needs another little boost. Like, the Guardian out-tanks them and out-damages them.
Yep. They just don't outrange them.
Yeah, and like the 5 feet walking speed or something, not really that great. The advantage on stealth checks, I mean, sure, that's nice, but there's a lot of other ways to really boost your stealth. And
right.
That's not really so much a combat thing. Yeah, I don't know. They needed like the ability to move without provoking opportunity attacks or something would be fitting and
right.
Help them. Yeah, or just more precise damage. Yeah, like in line with how a rogue damages, where it's the one powerful attack instead of...
I appreciate that they resisted the urge to cram a bunch of rogue light stuff into that armor. I get where you're coming from. It would have made sense and maybe even been balanced. But I'm glad they resisted the urge.
just because they resisted? Like, what are you saying?
To keep it distinct.
This game has too many fucking rules, man. It confuses the hell out of me. I get tired. My eyes hurt.
No, I get it. It's keep it unique, because at some point then it almost becomes like, well, why didn't you just play a rogue?
Right. I still stand by. I think they should have done something more unique at fifth level, and I think that would have made it perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I don't care about the extra attack for the Infiltrator. It would have made the armors feel more distinct and would have been a good time for them to balance out the lack of great third level ability from the Infiltrator.
And I'll also point this out, that the advantage of ranged attacks is often ignored because it doesn't always seem like a huge deal. But the Artificer doesn't need them. So that advantage goes away even more. It's not like they can't do ranged attacks without this.
That's fair.
So it just...
Right.
It's like, oh, you can shoot them from 90 feet away. It's like, that's not new.
Yeah, they get cantrips.
Right. Yeah, they get really good cantrips. And yeah, then like a light crossbow, which... short bow, yeah.
I feel like it does need to be mentioned. Like, this entire time, we haven't mentioned the fact that they also get spells. So, yes, they also have cantrips, and they're not going to outpace the other artificers that get bonuses to their cantrip damage. The alchemist and the artillerist both get those. But if they need a ranged option, it's not like the guardian one is totally at a loss. They just cast a cantrip this round.
Can you booming blade with your thunder fists?
I want to say no, but only out of just a gut feeling of I don't like it. But yes, you should be able to.
Let's see here. Let's
Artificers get booming blade, right?
Yeah.
So this is the one. It requires a melee weapon worth at least one silver point. One silver.
Wouldn't it be? It's your armor.
You brandish the weapon used... Yeah, the spell casting and make a melee attack with it against one creature. Yeah, I think you could.
But it's called Booming Blade, not Booming Fist. So, yeah, rules you as can intended. Just put
blades on the fists. You're an artificer, dude.
You got around it. You got around it.
Now they're thunder blade fists.
But yeah, that would be good and also pretty fitting because you're already doing the thunder damage.
Right.
Just keep it rolling. Rolling thunder.
Booming thunder gauntlets.
I like it. So now your one attack does the thunder damage, the disadvantage on attack rolls, and also locks them down with the, once you hit fifth level, the additional D8.
Booming blade needs to be banned.
Yeah, no, it's an unacceptable thing at any table.
Yes, you only get one attack. You only get one chance at it. So I guess that balances things out. Unless you go 13 Artificer, 7 Eldritch Knight. Then you can do your attack and a cantrip.
Ooh. And yeah, that cantrip could be Booming Blade, couldn't it?
Yep. Or you could just have fun instead.
That sounds pretty fun to me.
I know it does. You're the reason I hate Booming Blade, Kevin. That goes into my diary of spells I do not like. It's just Booming Blade written 300 times, and then one and Green Flame Blade, I guess.
No one ever uses that.
Now, overall, I like the armor. If you just get past that kind of weird flavor thing that I mentioned earlier where it feels more sci-fi than fantasy, but that's just kind of personal thing. Mechanically, I think they're interesting. Could be fun to play.
Yeah, I'm in agreement here. I think it's pretty good.
In terms of multi-classing, anything with fighter would, of course, be good. Yeah, certain wizard builds. Again, probably not blade slinging, singing, because they're really limited on what weapons they could use and not use and things like that.
Yeah, I'm actually having a hard time of thinking of what multi-classes would legitimately benefit from that. The getting heavy armor is great, and you get a bunch of benefits there, but the fact that your gauntlets or your lightning, whatever you use, have to be intelligence-based will make it a little tougher. I think.
Do they have to be? That's a good question. You can add your intelligence instead of strength or dex.
Oh.
It's not a you must.
That's a great point. Okay. Then, yeah, this is just good for it. Not any martial class, but for a lot of them.
Yeah, Arcane Trickster probably be good because they have a use for intelligence anyways. Yeah.
That would be interesting because you could run up to somebody with the Guardian, make, punch here, and then you can disengage as a bonus action, run over somewhere else, punch them, and then keep running. And then they now have to move towards you. And if you have other martial characters locking them down, they're going to be potentially taking opportunity attacks because they don't want to attack these people or they just have disadvantage on the attacks. You'd have a lot of that battlefield control. This would be really good. I really want to see a rogue armor multi-class.
Yeah. The Psy Warrior, the fighter subclass introduced here in Tasha's with one of these, would be really cool. Like all the psychic powers shoved into this armor suit.
Could be flavored that way too, where your armor is held on through psychic means.
Yeah. Monk would be terrible, as always.
Monk would be horrible.
Because, best I could tell, these Thunder Gauntlets and Lightning Launcher were not counted as monk weapons.
No. And regardless, you're wearing heavy armor.
All right. Well, it doesn't have to be heavy armor. This could
it
be
has to be armor,
light
though.
Armor. Yeah.
Monks can't wear light armor.
Right. Otherwise, they die.
Yes.
They did change, we haven't gotten to it, but they did change the monk to basically allow you to make anything your monk weapon in some sense. So the new changes might actually incorporate your Thunder Fists and your Lightning Launcher or whatever.
But again, you can't wear armor.
Yeah, it's still garbage. Well, I mean, yeah, you explode as a monk if you put the armor on. But
so that's where it ends. That's where the conversation ends. We don't need to have any further conversation.
He died with monk weapons attached to his body.
Yes. Like, this the only thing I could think of is with this only being an action to don and doff, at least you could take off the armor quickly and then put it back on when you're like, oh, I don't need to do my monk stuff now. And that's not good. Terrible. It's like what we always talk about with the bad multi-classes are the ones that don't get anything from each other. They just have to play around the different play styles. So you're a bad
monk. The 50% class. Yeah. Every other action I can do something.
Right. So yeah, bad monk and a bad artificer. Don't do it.
All right. You want to talk about the new infusions?
Oh, I would love to.
I want to talk about the arcane propulsion arm.
Yeah, hey, that's the first new infusion.
That's right at the top. So
I'm hoping we don't miss any of these.
Choke's on you.
Because they're just like...
I already looked up a list.
Of the new ones? Okay, yep, great.
I used other people.
I just went through it in Beyond, and it just meshed them all together anyways.
Why are you saying mish?
I don't know.
Where did mish come from?
Mish mashed and mash.
Yeah, okay. Mixed them and mashed them. Meshed them, whatever.
Put them in a stew?
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, there's a bunch of new infusions added in this. They're just added to the list, just available.
As Kevin mentioned earlier, they do not require it to be heavy armor. Any of the armor ones aren't. They don't need to be heavy armor. They don't need to be armor specific. As long as you wear armor at all, you can add these. So the first one is this arcane propulsion arm. So this gives a lot of benefits that are going to sound pretty familiar, I think. The wearer's walking speed increases by 5 feet. The armor includes gauntlets, each of which is a magic melee weapon that can be wielded only when the hand is holding nothing. The wearer is proficient with the gauntlets, and each one deals 1d8 force damage on a hit and has the thrown property, with a normal range of 20 feet and a long range of 60. When thrown, the gauntlet detaches, flies the attack's target, then immediately returns to the wearer and reattaches. The armor can't be removed against the wearer's will, and if the wearer is missing any limbs, the armor replaces those limbs. So, it's a lot of what you get from the armorer class. This does have a 14th level requirement. Should mention that as well.
Right, so it's pretty high. So yeah, you could give this to someone else, and it's kind of like your little sidekick. Your little buddy, like you gave him kind of like the crappy first sort of beta version of your Iron Man armor, which I think happens.
That was the plot to Iron Man 2.
All right. Regardless, though, I think all of this except for the last two, which are just kind of ribbon abilities, anyways. To be honest, what could add on to the other armor abilities? Like walking speed increases by 5 feet. Like there's not a limit just on that. So now you have 10 feet walking speed increase. And then the gauntlets, could this be your thunder gauntlets, which also have the ability to launch off of you?
Well, it doesn't say that you're proficient with it and it uses your intelligence or anything there. So would the gauntlet still give you your intelligence modifier?
I would think not. I think once it separates, it's a separate thing. But that's it's just like, so you could punch things with your thunder gauntlets and do your thunder damage and impose disadvantage and use your intelligence. Or you could launch them off of you and it's a ranged attack, basically a thrown attack.
Right. So this could be good, I guess, for a battlesmith. I don't know why you would really do that.
By the time you reach 14th. Like, if you have not been using thrown weapons and... Yeah, I don't know.
I don't get what niche this is trying to fill up. What you said, Kevin, makes sense if you're trying to have a little armored buddy. Great. I don't know who that's going to be. The halfling in the party, maybe?
Here's something. It immediately flies back. Meaning, if you have two attacks, there's no reason you can't just punch him again.
Right.
Yeah, it gives you ranged attacks.
That differentiates from other thrown weapons just a little bit. Because the thrown fighting style addresses the you draw it as just free.
Right.
So if you have that in play, you may gain some benefit from that.
Are you saying with like a multi-class with fighter?
No, if you aren't multi-classed, you can multi-attack with a thrown weapon
right
from one hand without dealing with drawing it and snowing it and doing any of that stuff.
Okay. Right. It would be good with the throne fighting style, because then you'd get plus two to each of those hits.
To the damage.
To the damage, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not until 14. Like, you pick that fighting style at level one.
Yeah.
This,
you know, or then if you're a champion and get your second fighting style and you have an artificer who gives you this infusion. Sure. I mean, that's really specific, but yeah.
That's how I feel about this infusion. It just feels so specific that I don't know where it's trying to fit.
Yeah, it's just so high. Like, if you got this like right away at level 2 or level 6, I can see it, because it gives you a ranged attack, a free, easy to do ranged attack with an increased speed. And like, that's the type of thing you kind of want to build a character around, not just like an extra thing you get at 14th level. It's like, right. I'm a 14th level fighter with great weapon master and wielding a great sword, and now I can launch my fist off of me, and that's like, that's neat. But I'm most of the time still just going to hit things with my greatsword like I've been doing for the past 13 levels.
Right. Asking the artificer to use an entire infusion on this, probably wouldn't bother.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, like, for a paladin, maybe, where they don't have many ranged options, you still can't smite fist, because you can't smite off a thrown one, can you? Has to be a melee weapon attack. Yeah. So that's really all you're getting, is you're getting a 20-foot ranged attack.
Yeah. I mean, you could also, you can just do a melee attack with these.
Yes.
It's a melee weapon that could be wielded, only when it's holding nothing, and you're proficient with the gauntlets, and so you could punch things and do 1d8.
But any martial character is probably going to be better off with whatever weapon is in hand.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise then they've just been suboptimal for 13 levels waiting.
Right, for this cast stupid thing.
Right.
So, it feels,
you know, if you're doing weird, like a theoretical 20th level build, you know, because it doesn't matter, you don't have those dead levels, you might find some builds where you can just snag this.
Right. Yeah, I think the only time I see it being used is if somebody wants to get some of the armorer features without going into the armorer subclass.
All right.
Because if you're doing this with the artillerist, and you're putting it on yourself, then you kind of get this armorer light addition.
Right. Yeah. So that's mechanical. Role-playing, story, cool factor. I mean, it's definitely cool.
Like, 10 out of 10.
I could absolutely see a table just say, nah, screw it, it's not optimal, but I don't care, this is cool as fuck.
Yeah, that's true.
Let me do it. Or you have a PC who, they essentially were killed in a fight, but the DM doesn't want to actually kill the PC, and so they're maimed and they're missing limbs and stuff, and the artificer, hey, here's this magic armor, and there you go.
Right. Yeah, we haven't been too big on the dismemberment thing. I know the first DM we played with, it was like every month he had to cut somebody's arm off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you just replace it with nothing, with no rules associated.
It's just, here you go.
Yeah. I mean, Evil Dead, in medieval one, he just like, first time in a blacksmith shop, and he immediately replaces his hand with a better hand. Like, yeah, that's totally how it works.
Yep.
I still think it's cool. I mean, this would also work okay for sword and board, because if you don't have a magic weapon, for instance, it's 1d8, one hand, punch, throw.
Yeah, d8, force damage,
Oh, it does force damage. That's right. That is nice.
Yeah.
The other thing to keep in mind, I believe there's still an infusion that just gives you a rocket-propelled arm if that's all you're trying to chase. And I think that comes at a lower level.
Yeah, is it? No, they might have. I was looking for that.
They didn't take that out, did they? I'd be
pretty deep. I
think that's what this is.
No way. No way. That's got to be in here somewhere.
They might have moved that.
Or is there a magic item that does that, and then you could replicate it?
Yes.
I know these magic items are getting too
long. And it's
14th
level arcane propulsion arm. Yeah, so
no, that's what we just
I know, it's the same name.
Really?
Yes, it is a magic item that is, yeah, it's called arcane propulsion arm. It requires attunement, which this infusion doesn't, but you can replicate the arcane propulsion arm and it gives most of this.
On the items that can be replicated and on the 14th one, that's not on there.
It is for me, Kevin.
Really?
There are two almost identical Artificer pages in D&D Beyond.
Yes. It's really frustrating. It's
not great.
I have the Eberron one open right now, and in Eberron, that's where they have the Arcane Propulsion Arm. So they were really just trying to bring it back.
Way to get it.
Yeah. No, seriously, because it does everything that the other one does, but a little bit less, because it doesn't do the... Well, it doesn't require armor, but it does do the exact same damage, the 1d8 force on a hit, and has the thrown property, 2060.
Yeah, I assume immediately walking speed's not increased.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's just a worse way to do it.
Yeah. Because it also takes attunement.
Right. Unless you're like a wizard with no armor proficiencies.
Then you don't need the punch. You don't even need the arm.
I was going to say.
Just don't have the arm.
Right.
I'm a wizard with only one arm. It really limits me because I have to use Mage Hand more often. My unseen servant does everything for me. Like, this is just normal wizard stuff.
Right.
All right, enough on Arcane Propulsion Arm. Yeah. Let's talk about the next one, Armor of Magical Strength. So this, of course, requires a suit of armor, has no level requirements. The armor has 6 charges. The wearer can expend the armor's charges in the following ways. First, when the wearer makes a strength check or saving throw, and can expend 1 charge to add a bonus to the roll equal to its intelligence modifier. Next, if the creature would be knocked prone, it can use its reaction to expend 1 charge to avoid being knocked prone. And the armor regains 1d6 expended charges daily at dawn. Very fitting for the armorer class. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it's a must pick, but it just seems really obvious. It's a great way to flavor that the armor gives you some super strength.
Right. Yep. The first thing would good for grapple builds. Like a strength check win.
Yep.
I'm assuming that would mean, like, athletics.
Yes, yeah,
not
strength
just
checks.
A pure strength test.
Yeah, okay. That generally covers any... Because it even says, when you're making those checks, it says...
Strengths, parentheses, athletics.
Exactly. Yeah. So, that's a good one. I like the knocked prone, or I guess avoiding being knocked prone aspect. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't come up all the time, but when it does, you'd be pretty excited.
Yep. Yeah, there's certain times where being knocked prone really, really sucks.
Every time.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, if it's, like, at the end, like, the final attack of the enemy knocks you prone, and then it's your turn.
Right.
You just stand up. But, yeah.
But when it's a Duergar despot punching you into a wall and knocking you prone, and then running up to you and stomping in your head, yeah. Being prone sucks.
Yeah, that really sucked. You guys should have had the armor magical strength.
We were warlocks, we couldn't. Sorry, Kevin destroyed us recently in a one-shot with a Duergar Despot, which we did an episode on, and we talked about how deadly it would be, and guess what, everybody? Super deadly.
It was deadly.
Super deadly. All right.
You guys were close, though.
We were. It's all right. I won't lament on it much longer. The next one is the Helm of Awareness. 10th level prerequisite, and it requires a helmet. And this requires attunement as well. So while wearing this helmet, a creature has advantage on initiative rolls. In addition, the wearer can't be surprised, provided it isn't incapacitated.
I always love advantage on initiative rolls. I think usually any like boost to initiative is always really great for anybody. Like, I can't think of a single class where it just doesn't matter.
Yeah. I can't think I've ever once. Yeah. I don't think I've ever once said that I want to be low in the initiative order because you can always just hold to do that.
Right.
Thing.
Right.
I was initially going to ask why this didn't use intelligence, but then I remembered that the whole point of Artificer is you can give this to other people, not just yourself. Right. So advantage on initiative rolls is great.
Yep, essentially a +5. And then can't be surprised. We've talked about that, I think, last episode, really, in the Fighter video/podcast about how we don't have surprise come up that much. But for tables, I do know there are tables out there where it's they try and fish for it. It's always a thing about them. The DM trying to get surprising them and vice versa. And it's just kind of part of their meta. And so it's just another way to avoid it. It's right. definitely far from the only way, but it's definitely nice.
Yeah. And the advantage on initiative rolls is enough to take it in the first place. And then
yeah.
when the surprise comes up, you'll be quite happy about it.
Yep.
All right. The next one is Mind Sharpener. So no level requirement. All that it requires is a suit of armor or robes. The infused item can send a jolt to the wearer to refocus their mind. The item has four charges. When the wearer fails a con saving throw to maintain concentration on a spell, the wearer can use its reaction to expend one of the item's charges to succeed instead. The item regains 1d4 expended charges daily at dawn. Lovely.
Yeah, I love this.
Amazing. Just a free yep. success.
Four times a day, at least. Well, maximum, but yeah.
Yeah.
Combine that with your already min-maxed war casting bullshit. It's...
So more important to
me... 1 in 5 million chance that I'll ever lose concentration.
Right. Whereas I like anything that gives an option to not take Warcaster. I like the Warcaster feat. It just feels too necessary sometimes because some classes are almost entirely centered around holding concentration, and that Warcaster just sits there looking way too enticing to pass up. So mm-hmm. this gives you a good reason to not take Warcaster, and that to me is a positive. You can do both.
Interestingly enough, the Artificer isn't really that.
You're right.
So this is just an unbelievable support for your wizards,
yep.
your druids, your clerics, everybody.
Right. Just hand them out like candy. Like, oh yeah, I used all my infusions on the Mind Sharpener. Everybody
just to ruin the DM's attempt to get rid of our concentration.
Or to make the DM sane because everybody took that instead of taking Warcaster. Seriously, I don't have like a huge hatred of it in the same way that I use some other stuff. It really does feel a little bit overdone.
I think feats should be banned.
That is the number one way to make sure that nobody ever plays a fighter at the table. Mm-hmm. I would even, if,
which is a problem.
Not that we're actually, you know, considering this, but if I were to do that, it would be feats only available for martial classes.
That is actually, if I was to massively retool the game, it would be via feats and not touch anything else, completely redo feats. I think that's actually a good idea for
5.5.
If they're looking to sell another book, it's like, here, here's how to add feats to your game in a totally new way.
Yeah. Yeah, so you heard it here first. Will only cares about touching the feats. Mm-hmm. I got you.
Good. No, I don't think feats should just be banned. I think that they add a lot of cool flavor and yes. customization to classes, and it would be horribly, horribly unpopular to just ban them because some feel too strong.
Yeah.
I think an interesting way to fix it would be lean into it and do the variant where everybody gets a free feat at level one. And then you just kind of balance around that.
The other way I have seen... The DM
just throws harder stuff at you.
Is it is very, very clear which feats are broken. I won't say broken. It's very clear which ones are more powerful than other feats. We all know Great Weapon Master is crazy good. We all know that... I'll say Sentinel's pretty good. Sharpshooter's great. Crossbow Expert's great. Warcaster's great. These are ones that just... They come up every time feats are discussed. If you lock those behind an in-game reward, like a master who teaches them, instead of it just being something that anybody can take at any time, it does become a bit more interesting. I've seen people use that before, where it's like, hey, these 10 feats, you just can't get them by choice. You need to actively work for them in-game as like a monetary reward. You spend 5,000 gold and a master is willing to teach you how to do this over the course of a week.
It also soft level right. locks them. You choose when right. they can get it, as opposed to them coming to the table at level one, being able to shut down the right. dragon's attempts yeah. to flee.
Right.
From 10 feet away, because they somehow did that.
Like, right.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, level four have Polearm Master and Sentinel. It's like, what? How are you this trained at fourth level?
Yeah, no, you're neither of those things. Banned from the table. You're having too much fun in my presence.
But I think you brought up the best point of it, is it soft level locks it. The DM can decide, like, okay, I think I could introduce Sentinel into the game and not feel like the players are taking advantage of it. So
right.
Now's a good time. Heck, that could be something for it in general. Is that like, okay, great weapon master, you need to be level 8. And just take out the master training you aspect.
Right.
Look at this. We could do a whole episode on feats, guys.
Hey, there we go.
All right, one more infusion. Let's get to that. Is the spell refueling ring. While wearing this ring, the creature can recover one expended spell slot as an action. The recovered slot can be of third level or lower. Once used, the ring can't be used again until next dawn. 6 level requirement on that.
Right.
And it requires attunement. An extra,
yeah, extra third level spell slot a day. Great. I mean,
yeah.
Nothing to complain about there. I could see using the slot also being one that you just kind of hand out to your casters.
Yeah, I'll say it's mechanically good, flavor-wise entirely uninteresting.
That's fair, yeah.
Like, it's just, yeah, this is good. End of conversation. You're not going to make this a cool thing that you've discovered. It's just, hey, here you go. You get an extra spell. Oh, wait, okay, as an artificer, you could say, like, it's a ring that just sucks up the magic of the universe just daily. It's just storing it in there and, you know, like...
No, it's got a tiny compartment. You open it up, the spell's in there. You hold the spell.
It's a piece of paper you have to eat.
It's a little motivational cat poster. You can do it. It's like, oh, I can. I can cast Fireball one more time.
And that's it. Those are the infusions. And all of the changes to the artificer this time around.
Yeah. Quick correction about some of the things we were talking about like loading up certain infusions. Oh. Each infusion can only be in one item. You can't
duplicate them. Oh, okay. I was wondering if that was the case.
Yeah, you must touch each of these objects, and each of the infusions can only be in one object at a time.
Okay.
And more, it's not like you can... object can bear more than one infusion.
And you can't just take the infusion multiple times, right?
Yeah, infusions known. When you gain this feature, pick 4 artificer infusions to learn. You learn additional infusions of your choice when you reach certain levels in this class. Whenever you gain a level in this class, you replace one of the infusions you learned with a new one. It doesn't like explicitly say that, but I feel like that's implied.
Hmm.
Maybe not, though. I don't know.
I guess, yeah, because I could see clear. Somebody wanting to take the +1 weapon twice.
Right.
And that doesn't seem too outlandish, as long as they're using one of their infusion slots for it. Or infusions
yeah,
known,
one of your known
slots,
infusions.
Yeah.
that's fair.
It does feel a little weird, though. I don't know. Might need to look into that.
Oh, never mind. And so separated from it, then at the end of the chapter, before it lists the infusions, there's more rules on it. Why wouldn't they put it up there? I don't know. But unless an infusion's description says otherwise, you can't learn an infusion more than once.
Okay.
So there you go.
Perfect. All cleared up. Can't do it.
Yep.
Sorry. No fun for you.
I don't think it's that broken to allow it. No. Like, as long as it's taken up a known slot. I'd allow it, but I guess that's not raw.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, overall, the new infusions, I like them. They're fun, they're flavorful, they're mechanically viable, they're good contenders to pick, but they don't blow the other ones out of the water where it's just like, oh, why would you ever pick those over these new ones? Which is exactly where this new stuff should be.
Yeah. I like when we see new things and we're not like, oh, this is absolutely broken in some direction.
Right.
I don't want to be overwhelmed, I don't want to be underwhelmed, just want to be whelmed. All right, now we move on to our promotional minute. Do you have anything left on the Artificer?
Nope.
Okay, great. So that is everything on the Artificer. Just a promotional minute time. If you are not yet, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to follow us or keep up to date on all things Monsters and Multiclass, you can follow us on Twitter. That is @monsters_multi. Or you can subscribe to our subreddit, which is r/monsters and multiclass. If you would like to support the show, make sure to go to monstersandmulticlass.com/support, where you can find our dice affiliate, Metallic Dice Games. You get 10% off your order using our code, and they're also awesome dice. You can buy merch. We still have that. And you can also subscribe to us on Patreon. And currently, our lovely Patreon subscribers are Joe P. I'm not going to say last names, just going to give last initials. We got Vincent M, Isaac M, Sentinel D20. What a weird first name. And Star Shinobi and Adam A. Thank you all so much for subscribing. All right, so customizing your origin. This is something that I think a lot of people have been asking for quite a bit of time. And overall, these changes were fairly simple from Wizards of the Coast. It was like a really small solution to, I guess, kind of a bigger problem. We can put it that way. Then they've been fairly well received from what I've seen outside of the min-maxing community. I definitely saw a little bit of anger, or maybe just a lot of feelings, let's say that, over some of the potential. Bear, you get whatever that is.
I think he's stealing the show right now. It's his tail. He's chasing his tail.
Well, he's doing a great job. So you keep that up, Bear. So what I personally have appreciated about these changes, though, is it frees up the stranglehold that races have had on choosing your class. As I feel like most people who are looking to optimize in any capacity have to think about what race they choose and have to build their character around that instead of building their character around a concept or a class or whatever. So it frees up that choice of the race, and I really appreciate that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's exactly why I kind of don't like it, because it's allowing the min-maxers to just have so... They're too free. They must be restrained. I think the people who play this game with character concepts in mind, I kind of get where this is coming from. They now can do their concept without a numeric penalty to it.
Right.
Which I don't like. Your character should be bad. It should be numerically inferior. All your stats should start at 11. And after the first adventure, roll a dice. If it's even, you quit adventuring forever.
So you've
I like gritty realism.
Right. So you have had this talk many times, but I think that D&D is just never going to have the restrictions that you want in order to be
correct.
As grueling as you would want it to be.
And I will say this, a lot of the min-maxing tendencies that you'll never expunge from the D&D community lent to very strange choices in whatever race people played. The DM couldn't be like, I'm sorry, you can't be an Eric Kokra or a Ganassi without stepping on toes.
Right.
You know? And these people didn't want to play birds or weird genie people. They wanted to play a character with high numbers on the sheet of paper.
Right.
You know? So I think that's... If that lets people do that, I think people will have less issues with it. And it also, there are some monstrous races that you chase down, and the DM like has to be like, no, you can't be that. I'm sorry.
Right.
Now they don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think what you're saying about just it, you can't take the min-maxing out of D&D. That's never going to happen. So all that it did is lock down what races people choose and make that an uninteresting choice instead of making it part of their character and, again, fitting the concept that they want to do. Because at the end of the day, min-maxing doesn't matter. If everybody at the table is good, or at least is happy with their character and how they play out, then it doesn't matter if somebody can roll through an encounter, because the DM can always just... They have all the dials. There's no limit. It's an imaginary one. You could just keep cranking those dials. It can get out of hand with min-maxing, but that doesn't change because of this. So from the few times that I've made a character utilizing this, I have found it a lot more interesting just being able to, again, make a character based on what race makes sense. What do I want to play? It does make Tortles very strong, though.
Yeah, and also, in terms of feeling like PCs and characters should have negatives, like things they are not good at, flaws, which I also do agree with. Again, that could still happen with this. You could customize things, and so you could pick one of the races you want to play that you find interesting and adjust the stats so it's just not a complete detriment to your class. But you don't have to pick the most min-maxy option possible with it.
Right. Right.
You can still boost a non-primary stat because that fits the character concept.
Exactly. Whereas if I wanted to play a half-orc who was a druid, before, the part that I'm bad at is my class, because I have a hard time getting wisdom up to a good number. Whereas now it's the half-orc is bad at strength because I dumped strength. That doesn't change anything from a perspective other than just taking it out of that box of half orcs have to be bad at wisdom, or sorry, can't be bad at strength. I don't even know how I'm trying to say that. It's free.
They say they have to be strong.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And now they don't have to be. They could be wise.
Right.
And, you know, whatever. It's a unique character.
Right. It shuffles the numbers around. That's it.
Right.
The negatives are still there. I appreciate the
simplicity. The mechanic is pick the stats that are changed, change them to the stats you want. You can't double up.
Right. Easy. It's a really simple change. But I don't know what more they could have done.
Rid of ability score increases at all.
All together.
Very strange point buy. I don't know.
Yeah.
The only thing this doesn't really address are like the non-numeric features of a class.
Right.
Like dwarves get resistance to poison and advantage on poison saving throws. There's not like a rule of swapping that around and giving it to someone else.
And that's what I'm really glad about. They could have made like a huge table of every feature and been like, this is worth 7 points.
Right.
That would have ruined D&D forever.
That would have gotten
Someone would have found the magic number. It's like, yeah, this one's like, you're unbeatable. It's just broken.
Right. Right. And it does,
I don't know if I'd go as far to say that would ruin D&D. Yeah. I think it could be fine, but it would take a lot of work. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It would take a lot of playtesting, a lot of balancing, a lot of tweaking numbers.
And it
would, like, this solves kind of the main issues.
Yeah, and it would go against the core of what 5th edition was trying to do, which was make it simple. Keep it simple, stupid. Just
here's 9 pages with a bunch of numbers and some charts for you to follow.
Right.
Also, these features now scale with level. Fuck it. All out the window.
Now, it does make, I think, a lot of... You mentioned, like, the hill dwarf, or is it mountain dwarf? I don't remember which one it is. Makes that quite enticing because they get their medium armor proficiency and resistance to poison. It makes halfling very enticing because now you can put your... What do they get? They get lucky. They get brave. They can move through creatures larger than them. And they get +2 and +1 to any ability involved. I think before it was like dex and wisdom or something else. Either way.
Right. Which, I mean, that's still good stat increase.
It
means that halflings were really good, and now they're still really good.
Yeah.
It's now exporting it to different class builds.
Yeah. I mean, they still have the issue of they can't wield heavy weapons, and their movement speed is 25 instead of 30. And that does come up a surprising amount.
Yeah. But it makes halflings really great warlocks now.
Oh, yeah.
Or sorcerers or whatever. And I'm okay with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. I'd say, like picturing a halfling warlock. Yeah, okay.
And for some reason before, like it's so dumb. Like before it was just, I probably wouldn't have done that. I never would have done that because it just would have felt mechanically bad. And if I'm playing a character in a long-term campaign, I want to fret over making it mechanically good.
Right.
Because my name is Jared Bornigal, and I'm a min-maxer.
I honestly, I am not. I go out of my way to make things as just, like, regular maxed as possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not like Logan, one of our friends who plays and plays very well at not getting his stats to sufficient levels.
Dude.
Every time I hear he's got a plus three and I've got a plus five, I'm like, you're playing this game incorrectly, Logan.
I swear, he does it actively.
I have so much respect for that commitment. It would drive me up the wall. It drives me up the wall and I'm not even playing it.
Yeah, well,
we've got problems.
He does the littlest things there. I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, it's like, oh, level 7 and I've got strength at 15 and I've got charisma at 15. It's like, dude, just make one of them 16. It changes nothing. It just makes it better. Like, what are you doing?
Your numbers are wrong. This game is about numbers. What don't you get about that?
So yeah, that again, I respect it. Just sometimes I do feel like I need to step in and be like, all right, Logan, you're taking this too far. Everyone's gonna make fun of your stats. So yeah, I'm sure he's going to love this. Now that said, Will, right now in our long-term campaign, you're playing a Firbolg Druid, which are specifically get like +2 to wisdom, and they fit the Druid character. Was that a choice you made because you liked the idea of a Firbolg Druid, or?
Yes, you know how much I love archetypes, and I will not let that be wrested from my control. And I know people aren't like that, but yeah, I choose archetypes that I want to play and I pursue them.
Okay.
I was going to say, you're now going to use this to play your Firbolg Druid archetype and get rid of the wisdom improvement. Like, put it in the strength.
Yeah.
If I could rebuild that character, it'd be more obnoxious.
Well, luckily, due to the options given in Tasha's, there are mechanical ways that you can rebuild your character. Maybe not the stats, though.
I was going to say, yeah, nothing written for stats, but...
Yeah, so I think overall, the only thing is there's a couple of things you might have to watch out for. Some of the monstrous races do get really good abilities just from the fact that they normally had negative modifiers and now they don't, and whatever else.
They still would get negative. They took negative modifiers are not mentioned in this. They
removed negative modifiers a while ago, actually.
Oh, just like as an errata?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay. I missed that. Okay.
Yeah. So I still don't think that it's going to be so important, but I don't know. Pay attention to it. The usual.
Right.
See, I think I have one thing written down. A lizard folk who takes +2 to strength instead of constitution, because then their bite ability is really strong right out the gate.
Mm.
That's good, but not the end of the world. It's a +1 right. In one direction.
Well, we should probably talk specifics then, how this works.
Oh, yeah. I guess we didn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's really not much to it.
Which is why we should have started with it.
right. Yeah, it's like when you're building your character and you first pick your race, you can move around your ability score increases I think it was a little already summed it up basically. It's just you.
Instead of saying you have +2 to strength and +1 to dex, you have a +2 and you have a +1. Put it where you want.
Put wherever you want. Yep, and just can't double them up.
Except for changelings. Changelings can. Because they get like +2 to charisma and +2 to a stat of your choice. Maybe it's +1, but they actually can double it up. That was specifically mentioned.
Weird. Okay.
And then it does actually talk about your proficiencies as well, as you can change those around. And so there's a little table for that, where if you have a language proficiency, you can swap that out for a different language. So maybe your elf was born in human society and they never learned elvish, and you want that to be a part of your character. Something that before basically any DM would have said, okay, you don't know elvish, pick another language. Now it's codified, so
right.
No arguments. Then I think the other ones are like for armor proficiencies. Yeah, so if you have a tool proficiency, that swaps 1-to-1.
Yeah, there's a little table here. Like, if you get a skill proficiency, you could swap it with another skill proficiency. An armor proficiency could be replaced with simple/martial weapon or tool.
And that's like the only one that really needed to not one-to-one.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, you can't just give yourself like heavy armor or something. Like drop a weapon proficiency and give yourself heavy armor. That's everything else is, it's one-to-one. Yeah.
That's where your little point buy system would come up, Will. Well, actually, a weapon proficiency and a tool proficiency equals a medium armor proficiency, so that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, there are absolutely games that do this, like classless systems, where you just use your points to buy your skills and armor or weapons or what have you. So, I mean, it can absolutely work. It's just, it's definitely not Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition design philosophy.
Right.
Yeah, my old hates classless systems. Video games where I have to pick like 90 different skills. I want to click one of three giant buttons that tells me how I smash things.
And I get that because we've mentioned before on the show that playing an archetype is fun. It is okay to say I want to play the half-orc barbarian and I'm going to be big, dumb, and stupid because that's the character I want to play. And yes, it's been done to death, but if you think that's fun and you want to do that, that's okay. This doesn't change this in any capacity.
Right. You could still absolutely do that.
So I'm with you, Will. I think every time I've played an archetype, I've had a blast doing it. So there are benefits to both playing within it and breaking it.
Right.
My personal take is that I feel energized when I'm restricted in a way.
Yeah.
If I know the boundaries of the archetype, I can work my own thing in without having to think, what is this strange new thing I've created?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it can definitely be a challenge to not play one.
Yeah. I've
struggled with that. About like, how would I act here?
Right.
Especially early on.
Yeah. I think you've done a good job of that, though, of sticking with the archetype where you've got a completely true neutral character who some reason has grown an obsession with real estate. I don't know.
Furbog from the woods who did not understand money at the beginning of the campaign is becoming the real estate mogul.
Right. You can just buy land and keep it forever.
As long as you pay your taxes. No, I don't like that.
What?
And I think that's good. I think that's great because then, you do have this true neutral archetype that you're going off of, and that's your twist. Your twist is some reason obsessed with real estate, and we'll see how that plays out. I legitimately do like it. Like, it sounds so goofy saying it as it is, but it's felt very natural in its inclusion. Whether or not it was intentional, don't care.
Find a thing, pursue a thing. I like to roll with the punches, man.
Yeah, I like it.
All right, and then finally, they just add in a complete custom lineage, is what they're calling it, where it's just 100% unique. Instead of picking a race, you have a custom lineage, and it gives you just things to pick. So you have creature type, you're humanoid, you determine your parents, and whether you resemble any of your kin, you are small or medium, your choice. Your speed is 30 feet, which is a little weird. I think they would say 25 feet is small, but then again, I guess that's maybe the whole point of this is like, you're small, but you got fast little legs. I don't know.
It's the, like, I don't care. Stop trying to complicate it. Here's your custom lineage.
Right. Yeah. One ability score of your choice increases by 2. You gain a feat of which you qualify.
Oh, that's why their speed's 30 is they have 3 feet. That's 2 foot puns.
Right. Then you get a variable trait. You gain one of the following of your choices, dark vision with a range of 60 feet or proficiency in one skill of your choice. And then languages, you can speak, read, and write common in one other language of your choice that's appropriate.
One thing that I do like about these is I feel like they are a beacon for homebrewers because I know people like making custom classes and stuff. And I know that a real homebrewer, any person who's like setting out to make a race from scratch isn't going to use this as a Bible and say, I'm going to follow this exactly. But they are going to be able to look at it and say, does mine kind of work within these bounds? Okay, I think I'm balanced and this is good.
Right.
So it's a good starting point for that. And I appreciate those.
Yeah, for sure.
I think most of what the races do come out as, they're really this, but instead of the feat, they get something more interesting, or I guess non-feat related usually.
Right. And usually they have two ability scores that increase, so 1x2 and 1x1. This one has two, but then the ability to pick a feat has the potential of being just stupid powerful.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm glad they limited that.
Right. My only issue is it does seem to be a really hard competitor to the Variant Human, which was already way too popular. Way too popular.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a way to do that without being a human. Variant Human is you pick a feat, and then you have two ability scores increased by one, and it can't be the same one. And I think this is maybe you get a skill. Yeah.
Yeah, you get a skill. But this is like universally better.
Yeah, it is.
In my opinion.
It is. Yeah, no, I would pick this over.
This is kind of a min-maxer bait, in a way. Because the 1+2 is, you know, for mono attribute-dependent classes, really, really, really tempting.
Right. Yeah, then with the feet.
That's fair. Now, that said, I wouldn't just allow this, I guess, for min-maxing reasons. And this is going to be up to the DM at that point, where it's the DM can step in and say, no, you don't need a custom lineage. There's no reason. That race isn't even a part of my world. Why are you trying to play a dog person? You know, it's just,
right.
That's the limitation there.
I mean, we all agree last segment, feats banned. Everybody loves that rule. They hate feats. They want them banned at the table.
That's what everybody is saying. Yes. Thank you, Will, for summarizing the entire D&D community's thoughts in one succinct sentence.
Somebody has to do it.
Yeah. So, I think for me, I would use it more as a starting point than I would for anything else. Because if I ever introduce a race, a brand new one, into my homebrew campaign, I know I'm going to be pulling this up first thing and tweaking from there.
Cool. Yeah, I don't think I have much more to say.
No, me either.
Yeah, not a whole lot to it.
So the other two things we'll just mention, they also do have mechanical ways that you can change skills and change your subclass. They basically all come down to pretty common sense stuff. You just spend some time and you can change that skill, training something else. You just forget how to do the old thing, I guess. And same thing with the subclass, just on level ups, basically you can take some time, spend some time with people, change your subclass. I don't think they're things that people really have needed, but good for Adventure League, I think. And that's it. That's customizing your origin and all the character options in Tasha's.
Thanks for watching.